Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. First up, a quick thank you to my supporting partners who help keep this podcast going as well as bringing you great offers. New sponsor this week is Precision Hydration, who are on a mission to help us all understand our own individual hydration needs. Hydration is key for racing, riding and life in general, and not just as simple as drinking a load of water. In fact, that can be pretty bad for you as it can dilute the sodium levels in your blood. The key is to match your intake with what you're losing. What you might not realise is that each person not only sweats at a different rate, but they also lose different amounts of sodium for each litre that they sweat. That means that hydration does not have a one-size-fits-all solution. Precision Hydration are here to help you work out how you sweat and then provide a hydration plan and simple-to-consume electrolytes that are tailored to your needs. You can visit precisionhydration.com and complete their free online questionnaire that will give you a recommended hydration plan. Or if you want to take it to the next level, you can book yourself an in-person sweat test where they measure your sodium loss super accurately without you even having to do any exercise. I had my sweat test last week and I learned that I lose 860 milligrams of sodium for every litre that I sweat, which is pretty average, I think. I now have my personalised hydration plan and I can't wait to give it a go when the electrolytes arrive tomorrow. If you want to find out more, then you can head to precisionhydration.com and complete your own free hydration plan. And if you decide you want to try using their range of electrolytes, then as a Downtime listener, you get 20% off using the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals at the checkout. Next up, it's Komoot, a new route planning and navigation app. We've got a gift for you. One of the best things about Komoot is that it's actually designed to work for mountain biking, so it doesn't force the auto routing onto roads like some of the software available. You can use it to plan routes on your phone or on your computer. Just give it a start and an endpoint, and Komoot will plan the best route for you. You can also select in-app highlights like coffee shops or viewpoints, and it'll add them into your route. The app is free to download, and you can use it via their website, komoot.com. If you want to take the maps offline, then normally you'd need to buy a map bundle. But as a Downtime listener, Komoot are offering you a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. All you need to do is head to komoot.com/G. That's Komoot, KOMOOT.com/G, and use the code Downtime, all in capitals, at the checkout. That offer is valid until the end of August 2019, so head over to komoot.com now and give it a try for free. I also really appreciate the support from you, the listeners. So keep on spreading the word, sharing the episodes on your social media. And if you want to represent, then you can do that by getting yourself something from our webshop, which is at downtimepodcast.com/shop. Don't forget to head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe and subscribe to the podcast so you get everything delivered to your device as soon as it's available, as well as joining our newsletter to keep up to date with everything podcast related. While you're there, give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Okay, it's time to check in with Elliot and Nico for our Val d'Isol post-race show. It was a hell of a weekend with constantly changing track conditions, crazy storms, topsy-turvy quali results and new winners in every category. So let's check in with Elliot and Nico to find out what it took to win. All right, so Val d'Isol's done and dusted. Another awesome race. We've got some new winners to talk about. And to do that, I'm back with Elliot Jackson and Nico Mullally. Elliot, how's things with you?
Yeah, all good. That was a really, really, really good race. Actually went to Lake Como on the way here, drove from Val d'Isol, and just bloody nice. It's just nice. Nice drive.
Nice place. Nice part of the world. Yeah, for sure. And Nico, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Last weekend was fun. Val d'Isol is my favorite track to race on, and I had a good time. We can talk about a bit more about how the race went, but I'm good. I enjoyed it.
Sweet, good stuff. Well, before we do that, congratulations on your national champs win. How big a deal is that for you?
It's probably a bigger deal than it actually is. You know, a lot of people notice the win at the national champs. You get a lot of publicity about it, but at the event, there's not a whole ton of media. I race against those guys all the time. Like Dakota and I train together and race each other a few times a week in practice races. And Charlie comes out in the winter and rides with us. So it just happened to be that it was the national champs, and I won the race. So. But it's really cool. It means a lot to the sponsors. It means a lot to be able to wear the sleeve at all the races throughout the season. So it's definitely pretty important for me as an athlete, and I'm really proud to win it. But yeah, it was cool.
Nice one. Yeah, good work and keeping the sleep.
Yeah,
good stuff.
I was nipping at his heels. I I made a couple of small mistakes which cost me the win. And yeah, it's disappointing, but I'll have to come back again next year and try to clean up my run and hopefully get the sleeve.
Yeah, what was the time gap between us, Elliot?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not too big. It's just a couple small mistakes. Just it was in the double digits, but small mistakes.
Good stuff. All right, let's talk a bit about Val d'Isère then. Elliot, you got to walk down the track with Bernard Kerr this week and have a look at the state of the track and some of the new taping up there. What were your thoughts when you were heading down?
It was rough. Like, they didn't really do anything to the track. Even I wasn't even here last year. And from 2017, I guess it's pretty much the same track. And it means that it's just super, super rough. But it did look, I don't know. It was such a contrast from what we've been racing, like Leger and Leo Gang and really even Andorra. It's just like so gnarly. Like, there is no one good line. Like, you're not, no one's inch perfect. Like, the track is, you know, maybe 20 feet wide in most spots, and people are using most of that 20 feet. And yeah, it was interesting too, because I didn't see, like, first day of practice everywhere else, you see people who are just like pinned. And here it's like everyone was stopping, even in Andorra, like, you didn't really have that many people stopping. And here, it's like every single section, people are stopped. Bernard and I were talking about how no one really looked super fast the first day. Even though I'm sure people were kind of trying to go fast, but you can't. And then in addition to that, Val d'Isère is like, you can't ride it slow. Like, if you try to just cruise down the track, like, the track doesn't work, your bike doesn't work. So you have to be kind of aggressive, and like at every step of the way, you kind of have to be at like maybe 85-90% to make sure the track works, or else it just feels too bad. Like, it feels too bad. You get out of control, get wild. So I think the biggest thing here was just like the track. The track was just gnarly.
Yeah, for sure. So, Nico, you're coming into a race weekend, and it's not just any race weekend. It's Val d'Isère, and you're seeing that weather forecast, like, super mixed. No one quite knows what it's going to do. What's going through your head at that point? How does the forecast kind of impact your approach?
I'd say Val d'Isère more than any other track. It's pretty daunting. Normally, I love to ride in the mud, but at that track, it's so gnarly that it just feels super dangerous. I think all the riders would agree they don't want to ride that track in the wet. It's steep. There's so many roots and rocks that it's just like some sections are nearly impossible to make it down. And yeah, when it did rain in quali, like, almost everyone crashed multiple times. So it's not like your typical just mud race. It's a whole nother beast. But I think, at the same time, in saying all this, all the riders really like it. Like, it's really hard. It's really technical. It's natural. What makes it rough is the roots and rocks. And it's like hardly man-made at all. So, I think it's probably, most riders would say it's their favorite track and would like more terrain like that. So, but yeah, the weather, you never know. Like, in the mountains, you see thunderstorms most days if you look at the weather. So you don't know really what to believe. Like, every race kind of has the thunderstorm in the afternoon if you're racing in the Alps or in the mountains somewhere.
Yeah, but does that forecast change how you approach track walk when there's that much rain in the forecast? Are you kind of, are you looking at wet and dry lines at the same time, or do you just have to kind of, you know, go with the flow and assume it's going to stay in the same condition that you're walking in.
Yeah, I'd say you definitely want to look at wet lines. And I think, you know, more, I walk the track again after the first day of practice. And at that track in particular, that's important. Some of the other tracks don't cut up as much, but Val de Sol, like, you can look at it on practice day, and or you can look at it on track walk day, and then after practice day, it looks totally different because of the way it burns in. So after the first practice day, I definitely went back, and we heard there was rain coming for quali day, so look at optional wet lines for sure, and not necessarily just lines, but things to be aware of, like, you know, this blind rise has roots after it that you want to unweight over. You may not be taking a different line, but just being aware of what's on the line that could push you off if it's slippery.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, Elliot, people were up on the track for a long time on track walk day. There's obviously a huge amount to look at up there and lots of stuff to remember. How do people approach that? Is there different ways that people kind of use to try and remember big chunks of the track? Was it something you were good at, or did you struggle with it?
I think Val de Sol, more than anything, you have to be confident in what you're doing, because you can't, it's such a personality track. Like, I think people stop up there so much because it's confusing. Like, there's no clear way to go about it. And there's not really like a main line so much. Maybe by finals day there gets to be like a one line that everyone's taking, but even on the live feed, you saw like a lot of people taking different lines. And that's not usually the case at a World Cup, because it gets figured out. And so at Val de Sol, more than anything, it's like, okay, what do you like to do? Do you want to like go inside and ride this off camber? Do you want like a more straight line so you can like late break into this turn and take like a shorter line? Or do you want to do like a way outside, catch a rut, and then like, you know, get set up for the next one? And so there's like all these options in every single turn and every single straight. And so it's more just about finding like what works for you. And so on practice day, it's just like confusing. Like, you literally like see people being like, man, like, and you see people trying like off the wall stuff. Like at the beginning, there was a, I think Ben Cath, I don't know if he did it this year, but I remember a couple of years ago, there was a, like a left-handed turn, kind of maybe like second turn in. And this year there was a big rock roll, and like Brendan, or I think maybe Greg Williamson, like went off the rock roll, and you're like, it's way out in the middle of nowhere, like cuts off the other turn, but you're like, yeah, could work. Like, I don't know. And so I think it's more about that, like finding what works for you more than anything.
Yeah. So a lot of time spent trying different things then.
Yeah. 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 It's definitely a hard one to like go and be like, oh, that's what Loic is doing, because like maybe you can't do what Loic is doing. Or like, and I mean, that's the other thing, is like a lot of the lines that end up developing take a lot more skill. Like, you see people doing more impressive lines there than anywhere, because at other tracks they might not pay off. Like, you go to Leo Gang and try to do some like brute gap or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, like could be faster, could not. And in Val de Sol, it's like, oh wow, like that's really impressive, really gnarly, and it was faster, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So is it a track then that kind of rewards people that are, I guess, confident in their own ability and happy to solve the puzzle for them rather than worry about what other people are doing?
I mean, I think you almost have to, because there is for sure, like, you know, it's not like there's like 50 choices on the first day. There could be 50 choices, but it does get narrowed down to maybe two or three by finals day. And I think, I don't know, I think it does reward like sticking to your guns kind of thing, and just knowing what you like to ride more than just like doing whatever, because you can lose a lot of time, like, or lose a lot of practice time, like deliberating over, is this the right line or is that the right line? Like, you really need to like practice your line there and figure it out. So you can't really, you kind of have to make a decision and then maybe walk the track like Nico was saying and say like, okay, this line developed like way on the inside that I didn't see. Like I need to probably try that or whatever. But you do need to practice what you're going to ride as well.
Yeah, fair play. So Nico, talk us a bit through bike setup approach for a track like this. And I guess that will have changed a bit over the weekend. So maybe start off with like dry conditions for your practice session.
Yeah, so this one was, I mean, it's super important to have a good bike setup on every track, but this one's challenged because there's some really big hits, but it's also super rough with the roots and everything like that. So you want the bike to feel like it's not getting hung up on that stuff, but at the same time, you you got to have it support for those big drops and big compressions so that you don't bottom out and you don't ride too low in the travel. So it's definitely like a tendency to want to go a little bit softer with your pressures, with your either your fork spring rate or your shock spring rate. It makes it feel nicer when you're riding. But when you get into a race situation where you're really pushing, there's the big hits that you have to be able to stay up in the travel and keep the bike driving forward through. So I've been back and forth a little bit between the coil shock and the air shock, and I went for the coil shock on this track just because it's a little bit maybe softer feeling off the top, which kind of takes some of the edge off of those repetitive square hits. And I pretty much ran in the same fork setting that I was running all year. And maybe just slightly lower tire pressure to try to get maybe a little bit more grip on the roots and rocks. But at the same time, like, you gotta be careful with that because there's a lot of stuff that you're gonna run into, so you don't wanna damage your bike by running low tire pressure. So yeah, I think that at the end of the day, like, you just wanna be on a setup that you're confident to push it, because the faster, I feel like on this course in particular, like, if you go a little bit faster than you think you should, it kind of gets smoother. Whereas if you are a little bit hesitant, you kind of get hung up more and more and more. But it's terrifying to try to push the limit like that. Yeah. But when you can stay on top of the bumps and just ride a little bit faster with a little bit stiffer setup, then those smaller bumps kind of buff out and you have good support over the big ones.
Yeah, and it must be a pretty daunting place to make a mistake, I guess, because it doesn't look like there's, if you get offline, there's a pretty good chance you're going to hit something and it's going to be hard to regain it. Is that something you just have to sort of accept and learn to deal with? How do you approach that level of risk, I guess, with a track like this?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's tough because it's not like a normal track where you're just, you can feel the edge of traction breaking and you feel yourself start to drift and can kind of ride the edge. It's like the things that are going to put you off are slippery roots mainly, and somewhat the rocks as well. The rocks have more grip than the roots. But you're like, be going along, and instead of just starting to feel the edge of traction break, you'll hit something that just completely throws your bike sideways. And if you're relaxed enough and you're comfortable enough, your bike can twitch out and your body kind of just like let the bike go and then bring it back without panicking. But if you're like super tense, then when your bike starts to slide, it pulls you with it because you're like really rigid to your bike, and then it throws all of your weight off, and then you lose balance and that gets worse. So the more you can just kind of go for it, be on top of it, but also be a little bit loose feeling and let the bike kind of dance underneath you, that's got to be the best way to do it. But it's scary on that track, especially.
Yeah, easier said than done, I guess. So just to add to that tension, you're getting ready to go for your quali run and then the heavens absolutely open. Talk us through that from your perspective, Nico. What's going on in your head? What did you do with the bike and how was your quali run?
Yeah, so last year actually we had the same circumstance where it rained just for quali. And it was so gnarly, like nobody had ever ridden Val d'Isola in the rain before. It's a track where it's almost consistently super dusty. And that powder dust makes it hard to ride, almost like riding in the mud, where it's like there's no grip, and it's unpredictable because it's so loose. And people always talked about, oh, Valdesoli in the wet would be so gnarly. And last year in Quali, we got to experience it for the first time. Most people just cruised on down. And then this year, we had the same thing. Like, it didn't rain all weekend. And then for Quali run, it just absolutely poured down. And it started right as the elite men started to take off. So even when I was at the top, like maybe 15 minutes after the first guy took off, it wasn't that bad. Like, I didn't expect it to be that wet. It had been raining pretty consistently, but I thought, like, okay, it's been dusty. Like, the open turns should be good. And then in the woods, it'll be all right. But it was absolutely not. Like, it was so gnarly. It was like ice in a lot of places. I couldn't see anything. I thought even, like, I had muds up there, and I probably could have asked my mechanic to change them. But up until, like, when I was in the start gate, it was raining pretty hard, and I was like, maybe muds would be good. But even at that point, I was like, no, the dry tires just will be all right. But absolutely not. Like, the mud tires would have been so much better. I ended up crashing twice in my run and qualified 35th. So, maybe it would have taken a different strategy if I had known how slippery it was going to be. Came out of the gate, like, pinning it, and then crashed and had to keep pinning it because after I crashed, I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to qualify if I, like, ride slow now. So I had ended up having to ride, like, way over my head the whole run to account for these two crashes that I had. So it was not ideal, but I made it in. And actually, I had the fastest split of the first split in my qualifying run, which is kind of cool, I guess. But it was it was definitely drier up there, especially when I went than the last couple of guys went.
So and it's tough, right? There's 60 spots, and if you're not a protected rider, you have, I guess, got to roll the dice in those situations and push, even though the conditions are suboptimal.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only reason I had that good split was because I didn't expect it to be so muddy. If I had known, I definitely wouldn't have ridden that fast through there. But yeah, it's tough now, like, with the qualifying. I actually, the past two races, I didn't qualify at Andorra or Leger, and Andorra was some trouble with arm pump and a few other things that I was struggling with that weekend that I put it down to. But Leger was really just a bad run. Like, I made a few mistakes. I blew out one of the turns right at the top of the course after that high speed section, like 20 seconds into the run. And once I blew out that turn, I started to ride tight and blew out another one, and then was pretty tight after that. And you know, in the past, I've had situations where you can make a few mistakes and then kind of back off a little bit. So you don't, if you crash at that point after a few mistakes, you might not make it in. But I thought, you know, if I back off a bit, get down to the bottom, I should be good. But the racing's so tight now, and especially on a track like that where there's not that much to separate riders, it's not too long and there's nothing too technical or gnarly on it. Times are just so close, and it just speaks more to the depth of the field. Like, everybody's so fast right now, and in a qualifying run at the World Cup, like, you can't. It's progressed so much over the past, even just this year from last year, but over the past 5 years or whatever, it's gotten a lot more competitive. And so for me, like, I wouldn't put it down to anything particular. I just happened to have two bad runs at those races in a row, which was definitely a disappointment and a little bit of a bummer. I only ever didn't make it once before when I got a flat tire. So to have two races where I didn't make the final in a row was kind of like, oh, what's going on? But I don't know. I was pretty confident that it was just like a bad circumstance. Like, just so happened that I had this bad run, and then the weekend before I had a few issues I was struggling with. So not a big deal. I think it just speaks more to the depth of the field right now.
Yeah, I guess, and it just really shows the benefit of riders being in that protected chunk, because therefore you can have a mistake or two and get away with it. So there's a massive advantage for those guys and girls that are protected, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you're protected, it's such a nice feeling. Like, you've kind of got nothing to lose. You can push, try to score points. And if you don't, if something happens, then it's like, if you have a mechanical or if you crash, it's like no big deal. You're in the final. So it's the same to get last or 21st at that point. Like, they pay points to 20th place. So you pretty much go for those top 20 spots. And I mean, just to my own, you know, I've kind of put myself in this position, but I've been the past 2 years, like, in that 20 to 30, like, the best, the fastest guys that aren't protected most weekends. And that's a tough spot to be, because you want to try to get up there and get into those places, but you have something to lose. Like, you can't make a mistake and miss the final. And now that it's 60 guys instead of 80, and now that it's so competitive, and on top of it, I feel like the tracks, like, not Val d'Isol, but the other ones this year, have been pretty straightforward, to where there's not so much separation between riders. The time gaps are smaller, and it's just it's a lot tighter racing.
Yeah, for sure. So, Elliot, I'm interested to talk a little bit about the data logging bike. So there's a few teams now running that. Do you think on a weekend where we're switching between wet and dry, or partially wet conditions, do you think having the data logging is a benefit, or do you think it almost neutralizes those that maybe advantage that those guys and girls have?
I think it comes down to how prepared the teams are with the stuff, because if it's the first time that you've done something like that, then you're kind of in uncharted territory. And because data really only means something when you have context. Like, if I gave you one run of data, it would mean nothing to you. Mm-hmm. So the reason that they're doing what they're logging data is to say, like, okay, this is what it's supposed to look like when it's riding good. This is what it's supposed to look like when it bottoms out. Here's what it's supposed to look like when you're going fast or going slow, or in a wet track or dry track, or rough track, smooth track. So if like, coming here, you know, all the teams, they're using that, they have been using that throughout the season, could have something to compare it to when it was dry, and then kind of same when it's wet. But it really would come down to, like, yeah, just what kind of, because the other thing is, like, on a track like this, you need to be in the ballpark, and it can help you. I think it could really help you be in the ballpark here, because sometimes you don't know on a track like this, is my rebound, like, too fast? Am I, like, packing up? There's, like, a lot more long sections to deal with here, where a lot of tracks you have rough sections, like, coming into the turn where there'll be braking bumps. So you could maybe run your rebound a little bit slower, or if there's, like, big holes or whatever. But like Nico is saying, it's rough the whole time, and you have to deal with G outs. So like, the rear would need to be, like, maybe a bit different than it would, in another place. And so, like, the data would probably help you say, like, okay, am I on the fast side, or am I on the slow side, or whatever, for a rider? Like, I think sometimes just translating that stuff. I know I was talking to, like, Kevin and Finn, and it's kind of a combination. Like, Finn doesn't really, I don't know if I had mentioned this before, but, like, Finn wouldn't necessarily collaborate with Kevin on that, right? Like, they're both doing their thing, mm-hmm. and Kevin would take Finn's feedback, and then Kevin takes the data's feedback, and it's like, okay, like, how can I, like, match these two things up to create, like, a perfect setup? And I think sometimes, like, it can be a little bit harder on a track like Val d'Isol to know where you are as a rider. You can say, like, man, it's just really rough, you know, but yeah, I think it could help, it could hurt, but it all comes down to, like, how prepared everyone is.
Yeah. And I guess, Nico, having some kind of deep understanding of how your suspension works, and then being intuitive as to what to change, does that help when the conditions are moving around so much?
Yeah, I think that was the toughest thing this weekend, was it was drying out, or it was getting muddier. Like, it was hardly ever, I mean, practice day was consistent, but after that, it was when we had the quality day and the race day, the 2 days that you're actually on the clock, things were changing around so much. So it was difficult to know what to expect in those runs as far as grip and how hard you could push in certain sections. So that was a big challenge. I think for me, I don't have access to that data stuff. I'd love to use it, but I think that, like Elliot said, you have to have a lot of experience with it to be able to really benefit from it at a race, and particularly, and you can kind of go down a rabbit hole with it if you don't just throw it on your bike and get some data that is useful to you. Like Elliot said, it's relative to all those numbers are relative to other. Like I could tell you what the inches per second that your shock is moving, but if you don't know how that compares to what you want it to be, especially in those conditions, then it's not really useful information. And I find it tough too, like on these tracks, to you get a setup in practice, and you always are going to ride a little bit faster, or the conditions are going to change, or the holes are going to get deeper by the race run. So to set your bike up, not for right now, but for how you want it to be in that race run, which is different from how you're experiencing the track right now. So you have to think like, okay, it's either going to be slipperier or more blown out, or the conditions are going to get better, or I'm going to be able to push harder. You have to like set your bike up for how you want it to ride, which is a lot more difficult than setting it up to like feel good at the pace you're riding and the conditions you're riding at the moment. So when guys have experience with that, to know like, okay, this is what it's going to be like in my race run, this is what I'm gonna, it felt this certain way on the last time that I rode, this is the changes that I want to make to be optimized for my race run. And that takes even more experience. And I feel like I'm pretty good at setting it in a ballpark range. It's close enough that I can not have any, I'm not blaming the bike for any issues. Like I'm happy with my setup and I'm going to push it. You know, this is close enough for me. But a guy like Loic, who has access to that data and has experience with it, running it every weekend on every race course, can take data from Friday and say, okay, in the dust and in this condition, is probably going to be the closest it's going to be to Sunday when it dries out. The grip might even be better because it's not so loose. This is what I'm going to need to do my fastest run, and kind of go for a setting without trying it in his race run that's going to be the best setting for him. And with those guys having so much information, they can do that a lot better than anyone else. I feel like you have to put in a lot of work to get to that point. Like those guys test so often when they ride, even outside of races, they're always using data and different conditions and finding settings that work for them. And if you just think you're going to throw it on and get some information from it, it's a lot more complicated than that, I think.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah, so that is. Oh, I was just going to say that I think, like, to Nico's point, like if you were to think about being on the edge of a setup, like you would want to be on the bottom edge. Like you could be on a setup and be like, man, it feels really good, but if I pushed a little bit harder, then like it wouldn't be good. And so you would have to be like, okay, it feels pretty good, but if I pushed a little bit harder, then it would be like perfect. And I think it's a hard one because like you sometimes have to go in almost a different direction to get on the bottom edge of the setup. You could be like in practice and be like, man, like it's feeling really good, but I'm on like the top edge or whatever, you know? So it is like,
super
like he was saying, kind
of. For me, some of the best bike setups and races I've ever had. On race day morning, I get on my bike first run and drop in, and it feels so stiff and horrible that I'm like, man, this is so rough. And then once you warm up and get into your second practice run and then do your race run, it's like spot on. But you had it set up from quality the day before where you built up to that run, and then you get on it race day morning and it's like, oh man, this thing is so stiff. But normally that's actually like a good indication that your stuff's working and you're on the right path.
Yeah, fair play. All right, let's talk a bit about the race then, and we'll start off with the women's. Elliot, you picked Marianne Cabarrus for the win. What had you seen? What had you spotted?
Yeah, I think too, one of the interesting things about this race was it was like the first, or I don't know if it was the first, but there was all four categories had first time winners.
Yeah.
So you had like Millie in junior women's, which was, it was super close. Like she won by what, 0.8? 0.08, I mean, sorry. 0.09, something like that. And then same in the junior men's, Tuhodo?
Yeah.
Tuhodo.
Tuhodo. Yeah, Arika Pena, yeah.
Yeah, totally. And so he won by like 0.3, and then they beat Kai by only 0.1. So it's like super, super close. And then same in the women's marine. Well, it wasn't close at all. She won by,
yeah, like 11 seconds.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like I know, like Bernard and I walking the track the first day, we're just so impressed. Like of all of the people who were on the track, like men, women, like she was pushing the hardest, it felt like. Just on the first day, from like first run, she just looked so good. And I think talking to her at Leger, she was so disappointed. Like she wanted that win so bad. And I think coming into this race, it was like you were saying with the conditions, I think her mindset was just like, she didn't care. Like it was, it could be wet, it could be dry. Like she was gonna go for it. Like there was no like, yeah, like I don't want to crash, I don't want to get hurt. It's like, no, I want to win, and I'm just gonna like really, really, really push for it. So I think kind of going along that same thing of like, if Valdesol, you have to ride aggressively. I think she was maybe able to get to that like next level of like confidence, and just I don't know, like her bike looked good, like she looked good, like she looked so focused. And then same, like Camille Blanche got her first podium.
Yeah, third place.
Yeah, totally. And it was so cute because her and Emily were on the podium together, like two girlfriends, and I think that like meant a lot for them. Like Camille has been like riding really well for a while now. And she actually, I think she won one of the splits, or maybe it was second. And so, yeah, I think, and she hasn't been riding for that long at all, actually. So I'm interested to see, there's like a couple of girls like Camille and Nina Hoffman, I think will probably get rides next year. And it'll be interesting to see what they do. Cause like Camille was pitted behind, I think it was Scott, like in the van, like her and Emily drove in, like just drove the van into the middle of the pits before anyone got set up. And she was just like pitted out of there. I think she was sleeping in there as well. But it was like, it's funny to see that, you know, like the winner of the downhill is in this huge truck, whatever. And then the girl that gets third is pitted behind her truck in a like a little tiny van, like no mechanic, no nothing, just sleeping in there. It's cool to see.
Yeah, really cool. And you know, a solid second place for Tracy, but a big gap. Do you think she's kind of riding safe now to try and get that overall?
Yeah, I think like you know, at the beginning of the season, like I was saying how excellent her mindset was. And I think she's in uncharted territory where she's like thinking about the overall a lot. I think she's a little under 200 points ahead of Marine. And so it's kind of like every time I talk to her now, it's like, yeah, I wanted to ride safe for the overall. And I think it's kind of good that she can still ride safe and get second place. But there is, there's two rounds left. And, you know, if Nina has a good run and, you know, Marine wins like qualifying and race, like there's still a chance that she could lose the overall. So I don't know. I think it's a hard one. Like, do you just say like, okay, I'm good enough to ride safe and still get second place? Cause like, I mean, she kind of needs to get like first or second to be like really safe, I think for the overall. But I know she's thinking about that a lot, and I wonder if that's kind of I don't know. We'll see. Like, I don't know. I don't know what.
Yeah, tricky
means.
Balance to get right for sure. But yeah, should be an exciting end to the season for the women's overall. And then moving on to the men's, Nico, start with you. A drying track. How were you feeling? How did your race run go?
Yeah, I was feeling pretty good. My plan for the weekend, I kind of thought that it might be better to go later on Saturday, just with as much rain as was coming in on that quali day, or was predicted even. Like, when I was at the top warming up, I wasn't sure it was going to be wet for my run in quali, but it was supposed to rain a lot that evening. So I thought, like, oh, come on, if you quali well, it's going to put you later. It's going to be drying out throughout the day. It's going to be better. And I did go for it, but had those two crashes. So ended up qualifying just mid-pack and went towards the beginning of the race with some protected guys, just having a rough day in quali. So I would have liked to go a little bit later. It was still definitely a little bit slick. Like, I went probably an hour and a half before the end of the race. But I mean, I'm not trying to make an excuse. It was my own doing that got me in that start position. So I had a decent run, ended up getting a slow leak in my tire. I hit something towards the top, and when I crossed the line, the mechanics checked it had like 10 PSI. So I don't think it like completely slowed me down too much, but in the bottom part of the course, once I hit that big step down about halfway, everybody saw in the live feed, and as I like pumped into it, I felt my tire go to rim. And there's so much gnarly stuff towards the bottom of that track. I mean, I didn't really have anything to lose at this point in the way that my season's been going. But as a rider at that point, you kind of like go into like a bit of protection mode, like don't completely destroy this bike and like break the wheel or rip the tire off. Like, you kind of want to like, I don't know, split second decision. My brain says like, do the best with what you've got right here. And that was to kind of be a little bit smoother through that bottom section. And then it was definitely not like carrying very much speed through the last 20 seconds of that in the grass there. But I don't think it would have been a huge change up for me either way. Like, I still rode decently and ended up in 38th place, which is mid-pack, not great. But decent splits, like, I think I was around 20th at the first split before that, which would have been nicer, but really liked the track and felt good on it. I really think it would have been a couple of second bonus to go towards the end of the day when the track was in better condition.
Yeah, fair play. And that wet quali session, you know, juggled the names around a little bit, and we had some new names, I guess, up in some of those top spots. And it seemed like a lot of them rose to the challenge and took home some really good results. You mentioned that the track maybe was a more favourable condition later on in the day, but some good performances there. So Baptiste Piron, Davide Palazzari, Johannes von Klebelsberg, Forrest Riesco, Jack Redding, Joe Breeden, all threw down some pretty solid times. Do you think, like, I guess that could go one way or the other. They could either kind of collapse under that pressure of being up there in that sharp end of the field, or kind of deliver. Did you speak to any of those guys, Elliot? How were they feeling about it?
Yeah, I think it was in qualifying. I thought it was funny too, just as a little aside, like, I'd never seen, there was like trains of like six people. Like, I remember Charlie and Luca got together, like Luca crashed twice and then Charlie passed, and then Luke was following Charlie down, and then Charlie crashed, so Luca crashed, and then next thing you know, like, Finn had caught up to them, and say, so all come down together, and it just looked like a bunch of red flags, but it was actually just like the nature of the race. And I think all those dudes who qualified really bad, like Palazzari, he got a flat or whatever and like qualified way down, but it was, like you said, it was good that they like rose to the challenge. Like, I think he got 12th, Forrest Riesco got 15th, and it was really great to see them like rise to the challenge. They rode great. They did have a much drier track, but it was just really good to see. And I was glad, like, a lot of people were like, oh, like, you know, it's going to be a terrible live feed, but it was great. And they did like an awesome job. And it was like great to see Lori just it was funny talking to him because he's like, oh, like I didn't think I did enough. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, I thought I needed to be way more wild. Like it was the most controlled run that I've had here. And you know, he ends up winning by a couple seconds. So I think finals was just wild. And it was like a little unfortunate that the conditions were so different for everyone. Like Kirk McDowell went first, I think, and ended up getting a top 30 or something like that. And his track compared to like, you know, Forrest or someone like that, like was so different. So it's always kind of a bummer when that happens. Yeah. But
yeah, fair play. Laurie's run was very different to his 2016 World Champs silver medal run there, where he was super wild and looked like he could come off at kind of any point. I saw something where he said he's done a lot of work looking at changing his body position to be less upright and more into the bike. Can either of you explain a bit more about that and why that is working for him?
I think that if you can be lower to the bike, it gives you a lower center of gravity. If you can have your legs and arms a bit more bent, you can use them to absorb impacts. And if you do get off balance, you can move front to back. If you ride with like straighter arms or legs, if your bike pull, it can more easily pull you front or back than if you have some bend in your elbows to be able to move and kind of absorb the bike rocking back and forth. So I think you just working on trying to be lower to the bike, absorb bumps better, be in a stronger position, and just lower center of gravity is going to be more controlled.
Yeah, it seems to be working because, like you say, that looked a lot more calm and composed. And yeah, like you say, Laurie himself said it felt pretty easy compared to some other runs that he's had. So yeah, awesome to see. And potentially a winning rider that we'll see plenty more of. I think he seems to have found that confidence now.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too is the attitude and the mental state. Like he's riding more confident and in control, and just like his run from 2016 compared to this one was maybe a lot of the mindset more than actually the technique.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, fair play. And then some other interesting results, I guess. Troy had a what for him would be deemed a tough weekend, still took 10th place. Had quite a tumble in practice, I think. How was he feeling, Elliot? Did you get a chance to see him after that crash?
Yeah, he crashed like first day, first turn, pretty much. Like we were just sitting there and had a crash, and I think he crashed again. I think it was I don't know. I think it's a testament to how good he is. Just like having a terrible weekend. It's like, yeah, Trey was off the pace in 10th place.
Yeah. And then David Trummer doing it yet again with a sixth place, nearly sliding onto the podium. Surely he's going to see some team offers for next season.
Yeah, I would think for sure. I am definitely interested to see how he does. I think he should be really careful about what team he picks because I think one of the reasons he's doing so well is because he's built his program kind of around what he likes and what he needs. So I think it's one of those things that's easily fall into like, oh, I would do so much better if I was able to stay in this maybe 5-star resort or whatever. You know what I mean? Like all of the things that you typically think of when you could think of like a, you know, a specialized or something like that. So I think he'll probably have some options, and I think he should really think about like what is going to fit, what fits into what he's doing now, because that's what he should keep doing.
Yeah, it's definitely working. And then Greg Minnaar seems to be back on pace. I mean, 7th place with a bit of a lie down halfway down the track is super impressive in a place like that. Do you think we'll see some podium action or some wins from Greg later in the season?
I think so. Like I'd never seen him so upset after a race. And I think it was probably because it was his mistake. He just said that he had been doing that line the whole time and came down and like his front wheel just slipped and just shot him off the track or whatever, you know? So I think it was like uncharacteristic, like Greg Minnaar mistake more than, you know, seeing him get a flat or whatever else. So he was upset. And I think it, I mean, that would have probably been another second place and to match up with his Leo gang. So good grief.
Yeah, that I was just going to say the turning crashing was super hard. Like it might not be able to notice that on the live feed or if you watched it on TV, but it was so steep, this like rock arm had turned into such a tight pocket that bikes, like the modern downhill bikes, could hardly fit through that pocket of that turn. It was really like every run you're kind of puckered going through that thing. So it was a really hard turn.
Yeah, fair play. And Danny Hart appears to be Mr. Consistent this season. So fifth place, sliding onto the podium, even with a puncture for a decent chunk of the run, I think.
Yeah, he had the fastest splits at the top of the track. And once he had that puncture, he definitely lost some time. So I think he would have been up there challenging for the win otherwise. And he looked good on this track. Like he looked like he was doing it right, attacking, staying on top of the holes. Yeah, it looked like he enjoyed racing on this one.
Yeah. And so Loic extends in the overall, solid second place from him, looking again pretty calm and composed. Tracy maintains her lead in the overall, but loses a bit of margin to Marin. And then we move on to Lenzerheide. How will riders be feeling about that? Will they be grateful that it's a maybe slightly less physically and mentally demanding track, or will they be missing the challenge of a track like Val d'Isère?
I think that Lenzerheide is a bit mixed. Like it's got some really technical sections, but it's definitely not too straightforward like other tracks have been. So I think it's a good track. I think riders enjoy it. I think it's one that is welcomed in the series, and it should produce some good racing, like maybe not as spread apart as Val d'Isère, but definitely more technical and more to separate riders than Leger or something like that.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, well, we'll let you guys get on with the rest of your day and enjoy what the Swiss mountains have to offer you. And yeah, we'll get back in touch and have a catch up after Lenzerheide World Cup this weekend.
Sweet. Well, thanks a lot, Chris. We'll chat with you after the race.
Nice one. Cheers, guys.
Sounds good. See ya.
All right, that's it for our Val d'Isère post-race show. I hope you've enjoyed hearing some more about the weekend from Elliot and Nico. If there's any particular areas or topics that we don't currently cover or you really want us to discuss, then please get in touch and let me know. Thanks to Komoot and Precision Hydration for supporting the podcast. Don't forget, they've both got great listener offers for you. Head to komoot.com/G and use the code DOWNTIME, all in uppercase, to get a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. And Komoot is spelled KOMOOT. Head to precisionhydration.com to learn more about your specific hydration needs and for your free hydration plan. Then to get 20% off all Precision Hydration products, just use the code DOWNTIME, all in capitals, at the checkout. Please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then you know what to do. Head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.